get ready for an all-new Hardline segment. It's time to step into the snake pit. And now, with something completely over the top, the host and star of the Snake Pit, Snake.
Brought to you by
Twin Peaks and American Leak Detection.
Thank you to those fine sponsors. So we are live at the Woodford Reserve Musers Campout. Started at 1 o'clock today. We'll go deep into the night. And one of the hallmark staples of the Musers Campout, of course, is Coast to Coast with Junior Miller, who joins us now.
Yes.
I thought I saw a drone circling earlier.
Oh, no. Really?
I think they found you.
Great. Well, first of all, I would like to be the first to officially welcome you, Corby, and you, Bob, and you, Davey, to the Woodford Reserve Musers ticket count.
Oh, thank you.
We thank you.
I would like to do that on the record.
Thank you for your continued ownership of this event.
I would like to get it on the record and get it out here in front of all the P1s and all of our service men and women who are listening to this on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up, because we have not yet. We tend to do.
So it's officially open now.
It's
been welcomed.
All of our ships at sea.
Can I plug Coast to Coast?
I did already, but do it again.
So we're going to start at sunset, God willing.
Mm-hmm. What is sunset according to the Farmer's Almanac today?
We're going to do, because we don't want to disclose our exact location here, so we're going to do what is the average sunset for Dallas-Fort Worth, basically, you know, around Arlington. And that's roughly 8:10 to 8:15.
Okay.
So that's Metroplex sunset. We'll hit the air then if they don't shut us down before that. And I'm very excited because I've got a personal story that I'm going to share for the first time ever.
Oh, wow.
Something that happened to me recently. And we're also going to be joined around 8:30 by a gentleman who's got a new book out. And he is the only known human to have interfaced and actually have a relationship with Sasquatch.
Wow.
So we will have
a relationship. Like an intimate relationship?
A relationship. We'll find out how intimate.
Yeah.
But he's going to join us tonight, so I can't wait for our lineup.
Are you going to ask McLaren to come on and speak about aliens?
Who's that?
Matt McLaren.
Oh, yeah. He works here.
Yeah. He's on the air right after you.
Yes, that's right. I've met him.
Yeah, you have.
He's a great guy.
He really is. Yeah,
I wouldn't mind Matt telling his story. I know he fairly recently told it on the air, but
maybe after dark there are some secrets that he couldn't tell before.
Yes, I would be more than happy to have him join and share that story.
Sounds like you wouldn't be.
Are you close to the 100th meridian tonight, do you think?
I don't want to get into that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's where the West begins.
Why are you trying to bait him?
Well, I just think if we're looking for Sasquatch out here, that we should at least.
But what you're doing is now you're letting the people that are trying to find Craig and shut whatever he's doing down, now you're giving them an indicator of
what
the reaction.
Okay, I should tell them we're not that close to the 100th meridian.
There you go. Good. Much better. So we had you on not only to promote Coast to Coast tonight, but also to confront you on your perpetual and continuous takedown of someone that was a hero to so many of us growing up.
Sully.
And that is Herbert Morrison.
When I was driving out here and I heard you tease that, as you're building it up, Bob, that was my first thought.
Yes,
Sully.
I thought this was another Sully takedown.
Then you said the Hindenburg guy, and I started laughing, and I was thinking to myself, I know we've done a lot of broadcasting in 30 years, but I honestly don't remember having an issue with the Hindenburg guy.
Oh, I remember it.
What did I say?
Why do you want to end him?
You said, and I quote, "That was the lamest live broadcast of a disaster I've ever heard."
I don't doubt that I said that.
Yeah.
I just don't remember saying
it. Well, you certainly did. And so last night, or earlier this morning, there is a 38-minute audio clip of Herbert Morrison where it is a pregame show of the Hindenburg landing. It is the crash audio, and then it's the postgame of it.
The on-deck show.
Yes, right. The Diamond Talk.
Yes.
They took calls.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, the Hindenburg disaster was of a German airship that took place on May 6, 1937. Okay? And as Bob didn't know, because Hindenburg,
I've always been told a German ship, and I'm just assuming they had a home game at least.
They did not.
Did you know this?
Why was he broadcasting in English?
Yeah.
Huh?
Why wasn't he broadcasting in German?
Well,
because all
the ships at sea, like America needed to know how this was going. They were very, very curious.
Yeah. Well, it had made trips back and forth from Germany to the United States and really all over Europe.
I figured he was on radio row like at the Super Bowl and all the different languages.
This is the only one
there
that survived. And so WLS in Chicago sent this kid, he was 30 years old, Herbert Morrison, to cover the landing of the Hindenburg. And it was going to take place in a little province in New Jersey. And so he flies out there, and you'll hear the audio him talking about flying American Airlines. Because it's 1937, American Airlines was brand new. And they sent him and an engineer, their killer of the day, to cover this event.
Wi-Fi.
And nothing was ever recorded on radio back at the time, because why would you? There was
right.
no reason to. Radio was still pretty new.
It's like the hard line.
Exactly.
Don't keep anything.
Yeah, nothing. Let's just keep moving on.
Hear that, DJ?
And so they sent this engineer, and the bosses at WLS told Herbert Morrison and his engineer, hey, look, we don't want to do this live, so I want you to record this, and then we'll play snippets of this throughout the day, anticipating, of course, that it would just be, oh, and the glory of this airship coming down over the United States of America, and oh, look at this. Not anticipating that it would be some sort
of amazing German technology.
If it was going to be one of the big natural disasters of the 20th century.
Not natural.
Natural enough. And
I got you there.
And you can sit down too, Gordon. I didn't know you were here as you're eating. So they send him out there, and here is the pregame show. They set and the reason that this even exists is because they were going to use this new technology called recording devices to record this guy so they could cut it up into pieces and play it on the air. So here is the pregame show of the Hindenburg landing with Herbert Morrison.
How do you do, everyone? We're greeting you now from the Naval Air Base at Lakehurst, New Jersey, from which point we're going to bring you a description of the landing of the mammoth airship Hindenburg, which was due here in America this morning at dawn, completing the first transatlantic crossing of the 1937 season. Charlie Nielsen, one of our WLS engineers, is here at my side working the controls. We both flew down from Chicago yesterday afternoon aboard one of the giant's new 21-passenger flagships of American Airlines. It took us only 3 hours, 55 minutes to fly nonstop from Chicago to New York.
Pause
when we landed at
Newark.
Wow.
Did you hear the time it took?
Almost 4 hours.
From Chicago to New York? What is that now?
2.
If that, maybe, yeah.
How many passengers did he say?
21. A giant new Airbus.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, the nonstop, by the way, he had to point that out. We're not stopping a bunch of places on the way to New York.
Right.
Well, if you think you're scared to get on a Boeing today, what was it like to step foot on a plane in 1937?
Oh, my God.
Right. They just launched this new thing called airlines, and you're supposed
and
to
everybody's
have
smoking on there.
Oh, God, yes.
Incredible.
All right, continue.
Nonstop from Chicago to New York. When we landed at Newark, we found another flagship of American Airlines waiting to take us to Lakehurst with our equipment when we were ready to go. And incidentally, American Airlines is the only airline in the United States which makes connections with the Hindenburg. And as we came in for a landing on the runway of the field here at Lakehurst, we could easily see that a great event was about to take place. Last-minute preparations were being made to handle the landing of this great ship. It was just 1 year ago today, May 6th, that the Hindenburg made its first regular passenger flight to America, the flight that inaugurated the first air service across the Atlantic. So this occasion is doubly significant. It is the first anniversary of the inauguration of the service and marks the first flight of this year. The Hindenburg left Frankfurt, Germany, Tuesday evening, rather, at 7:30 their time. And for better than 2.5 days, they've been speeding through the skies over miles and miles of water here to America. It was due to land at Lakehurst this morning at dawn, but we learned after our arrival at Newark that adverse wind conditions had been encountered over the area surrounding Newfoundland, which slowed the speed of the ship considerably.
All right, pause it right there. So I want you to listen to this guy as he's broadcasting to America.
He's got the chops for this.
The math that he introduces us to concerning plane speed, airship speed, wind, and all of that, that he's breaking news to us.
Which slowed the speed of the ship considerably. Now, when I say that it slowed the speed of the ship, by that I mean the speed of the travel over water or land. Now, the ship keeps in the air a constant speed, which is in the neighborhood of 80 miles an hour. If it is flying into a wind of, say, 30 miles an hour, as it has been all last night, the 30 miles an hour must be subtracted from its airspeed to give us the speed it travels over land or water, which would be 50 miles an hour when we make the subtraction. Now, if we had received a tailwind, one that would help it along, then we'd have added the 30 miles to the airspeed, and it would have helped the Hindenburg to travel over land at a total of 110 miles an hour. In that case, the ship would have come in ahead of time this morning or long before dawn.
What about over water?
What if it's 20 miles an hour?
Right, he's really throwing me off.
What if there was another Hindenburg coming from the opposite direction at the same time, at the same speed?
That's right. How long would it take for them to explode each other?
Equations pass scrutiny of modern times?
Probably not. But is that audio not amazing? That
it's very good quality.
It still exists from 1937, and I don't know if we have anything better.
It was on their podcast, right?
Concerning a historical event. This has got to be the
Hindenburg podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what that was broadcast.
You have to smash the subscribe button.
Okay, so
don't forget to smash that like button and subscribe. It really helps with the algorithm.
So let's take a 3-minute break and come back, and let's play the actual crash audio, and we'll ask Craig, why has he turned on Herbert Morrison next?
The ticket.
Up two ropes, and whether or not some spark or something set it on fire, we don't know, or whether something pulled loose on the inside of the ship causing a spark and causing it to explode in the tail surface. But everything crashed to the ground, and there's not a possible chance of anybody being saved.
All right, pause it there.
I wish you could.
So
that's different than they would do now. Now they always do the, we have no reports on.
Well,
casualties cannot be confirmed right at this time.
He just said there's no way anyone survived, right? When
62 people survived.
Yeah. Two-thirds of the ship survived, but he's like, everyone's
Everyone's dead. If you had someone on this, make funeral arrangements.
Now, he said that, saying everyone's dead, but then he followed it up with this.
I wish I could stop in just a moment and see if I can get my breath again. And Charlie, if you'll fade it out just a minute, I'll come back with more description, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm back again. I raced down to the burning ship, and just as I walked up to the ship, over climbed over the picket line, I met a man coming out, dazed. He couldn't find his way. I grabbed a hold of him. It's Philip Mangone. Philip Mangone, A-N-G-O-N-E, of New York. Philip Mangone, he's burned terribly in the hands, and he's burned terribly in the face. His eyebrows and all his hair is burned off, but he's walking and talking plainly and distinctly, and he told me he jumped. He jumped with other passengers. Now, there's a Mr. Spay. It sounds like Spay. We're not sure of it. And he also got out, and we noticed the lines, the different lines, the airship.
So he's saying that he, you know, everyone's dead except for the guy that I just came across. It's burned up. Now
he's
no hair.
Burned up. He looked horrible.
Unbelievable what fire can do to a man. No hair, I tell you.
Yes. Also funny, he said that he saw a bunch of people fainting, and I have a theory that people fainted way more back then than they do today.
Why?
Why don't people faint much anymore? But back then, that's all you saw in the movies.
And it's they hold the back of their hand to their forehead. And,
yeah.
And
that's why they're fanning themselves.
Why have we, as a society, though, really accentuated the humanity, when it was pretty casual when he said it, when he was, you know, going over the initial explosion. Oh, the humanity, like it was just part of conversation.
Yeah, did he only say it once?
That was it. But we have...
It is so crazy.
We think it's like this pause of,
Well, Junior's entire case.
Do you believe
them in
miracles? And I mean, that was like such a catchphrase. Oh, the humanity.
I know.
Did you know the...
catchphrase. Shouldn't say it.
The last
year, did he trademark it?
People weren't wearing shirts and stuff.
What year did the last survivor of the Hindenburg?
There had to have been
Didn't they just show him at the Mavericks game or something like that, or the Stars game?
I was a World War II guy.
Oh,
There had to have been a five-year-old on there, right? Or was it an adults-only, like a booze cruise in the air?
It was a topless cruise, I think.
The last survivor, Werner Donner, died November 8, 2019.
Good to be with you.
Wow.
At the time of the disaster, Donner was 8 and vacationing with his family.
Wow.
How affluent.
That is right.
Hey, Werner.
Hello, Corby.
He recalled later his mother threw him and his brother out of the ship and jumped after them. They survived, but his father and sister were killed. So do some jokes about that.
Well, funny thing. My dad was not that nice. So he was back in the topless section at the time.
Oh. Pre-Hitler.
Yes, he was a Nazi. That's right. He was a pre-Nazi.
A pre-Nazi.
All right, Craig. Would you like to apologize to the family of Herbert Morrison?
Yes, I apologize. Okay.
Thank you.
That's all we really wanted out of this.
What about the
should he have won a Katie?
Werner Donner.
I'd give it away.
In hindsight, perhaps, maybe a Lifetime Achievement Award, something like that.
There is something sketchy about a reporter who's covering what he knew was a seminal event right there, then and there, saying, I'm going to run inside now and hide.
Right.
I'll be back later.
Well, it was live to tape, so.
I know, Werner. You're very sick.
You know, not exactly live. He went back and threw it on Adobe Premiere and tightened it up a little bit.
He did not keep his composure and just completely lost it. And
yeah.
The way he's trying to yell at people to get out of the way when there's no way they can hear him.
Please, please, I can't talk to you. I can't talk to anyone right now.
You know, as I'm thinking about it, he obviously had never seen anything like that in his life. Are we so desensitized?
He should have known. It was called the Hindenburg.
Right.
Had he never heard of the Hindenburg disaster?
Are we so desensitized to things today? Because back then, he didn't go to movies where things were blowing up all the time.
Yeah.
He didn't watch evening news where things were, you know, being destroyed or tragedies were being reported on all the time. Is that why it hit him so hard? Like today, a reporter would probably better be able to keep their composure because they're desensitized.
I think if you saw something that was, you know, 100 feet in the air or whatever, that you knew that there were 100, you know, I think, let me see how many people.
97 people.
Okay.
36 passengers, 61 crew.
All right.
61 crew?
30 some odd people ended up dying, I believe.
A little crew heavy.
Well, so if you saw that, if you saw something
like
burning right above you,
station.
Would you be able to compose yourself and just say, it's burning, it's on fire, I see people jumping now? Or would it be a very 9/11 episode where it's like, oh, my God?
That's a good question. I would like to think that I would be able to keep my composure. Just as a broadcast veteran, been in this business for a long time. I would like to think I could, but then again, I only talk about sports. I'm not a news reporter.
Yeah,
right. I am. You can ask me.
So you're right there. 100 people are in this little parking lot right here, and 97 of them get on this ship, and they go to altitude, and then they all die right in front of you. And you are either unmoved, or the other side of the spectrum is,
the ship blew up.
You're feeling,
I'm okay.
You're feeling,
that's the important thing.
Wimby finished second in the defensive
bike ride.
I think your job instincts.
When this is done, where are we going to go to eat?
I think your job instincts would kick in for most reporters. I don't think most reporters, I'm talking about today's reporters. Like I said, I think there is a difference 100 years later. But I think most reporters today, their instincts would kick in. They would be emotional, but I don't think they'd be that emotional. I think they would be able to report on it, knowing they are the conduit between the people listening and this tragedy. People are going to want to know what's going on.
I think there's also the aspect of the fact that he knew he was recording this. If he was live on the air, he wouldn't have stepped inside. He wouldn't, I need to take a break.
Maybe.
Oh, my God, I can't believe what I've just seen.
Maybe. But it's like, you know, the reporters last night, the guys who were doing play-by-play of the second half of the Mavericks, they didn't run and cry. They knew something horrific was unfolding.
And I don't know that you can compare the second half last night to the Hindenburg.
And they gave us the play-by-play.
Was he at a time?
In a way, you're right.
Their instincts kicked in.
They did.
Was he at a time, though, as humanity had just begun, like in 1937, where he thought performatively as a broadcaster, I need to convey the emotion by suggesting that I am in tears.
No.
I don't think it sounded
like Dale Hansen school.
It's
right. People, did he sign the bottom of the screen?
People want me to cry.
Let
right
me gin up some false tears real quick.
That sounded legit.
And sign the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a guy that was freaking out. I mean, you're right.
George Reba.
But the one issue that I have
to George Reba.
The one issue that I have with this is that these airships, whether it was the Hindenburg or whatever, they had had several disasters like this over the course of like 10 years. This ended it, mm-hmm. you know, for a while. But there had been news reports of other airships, Zeppelins or whatever, exploding because of weather. You know, and so, I mean, it's not like you didn't think unequivocally this couldn't have happened, but it happened right in front of you.
Was he kind of like a spare reporter, or was he like a lead guy?
No, he was a lead guy, and I don't think I think radio was still at the point where you're going to send your best to cover something like this, I think.
Yeah, he got to fly on American Airlines to cover this.
Yes, he did. They flew him from Chicago to New York City.
He wasn't an intern or anything.
No, it wasn't EA. They didn't send EA to cover this.
I'm reporting on the Hindenburg.
He definitely sounded like he's here again with Sparky Anderson for a while there.
Okay, so he gathers himself inside, and then he comes back out for the postmortem.
To take calls.
It's time for our big-time giveaway.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm back again. I've sort of recovered from the terrific explosion and the terrific crash that occurred just as it was being pulled down to the mooring mast. They're still smoking and flaming and crackling and banging down there. And I don't know how many of the ground crew were under it when it fell. There's not a possible chance for anyone to be saved. The relatives of the people who are waiting here, ready to welcome their loved ones that came off this great ship, are broken up. They're carrying them in to give them first aid and to restore them. Some of them have fainted. And the people are rushing down to the burning ship. The fire trucks have all gone down to see if they can extinguish any of the blaze whatsoever, but the terrible amount of hydrogen gas in it just caused the tail surface broke into flame first, then there was a terrific explosion, and that followed by the burning of the nose and the crashing nose into the ground, and everybody tearing back at breakneck speed to get out from underneath it, because it was over the people at the time it burst into flames. Now, whether it fell on the people who were witnessing this, we do not know. But as it exploded, they rushed back. And now it's smoking, a terrific black smoke floating up into the sky. The flames are still leaping maybe 30, 40 feet from the ground, the entire 811 feet length of it. They're frantically calling for ambulances and things. The wires are being humming with activity. And I've lost my breath several times during this exciting moment here. Will you pardon me just a moment? I'm not going to stop.
All that was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. All
he's painting the picture.
Reporting. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't know how long after this. I mean, you can hear things going on in the background, so I'm assuming it was within 5 minutes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Will you pardon me just a moment? I'm not going to stop talking. I'm just going to swallow several times until I can keep on. I should imagine that the nose is not more than 500 feet or maybe 700 feet from the mooring mast. They had dropped two ropes, and whether or not some spark or something set it on fire, we don't know, or whether something pulled loose on the inside of the ship causing a spark and causing it to explode in the tail surface. But everything crashed to the ground, and there's not a possible chance of anybody being saved.
All right, pause it there.
I wish you could.
So
that's different than they would do now. Now they always do the, we have no reports on.
Well,
casualties cannot be confirmed at this time.
He just said there's no way anyone survived,
mm-hmm.
right? When
62 people survived.
Yeah. Two-thirds of the ship survived, but he's like, everyone's dead.
If you had someone on this, make funeral arrangements.
Now, he said that, saying everyone's dead, but then he followed it up with this.
I wish I could stop in just a moment and see if I can get my breath again. And Charlie, if you'll fade it out just a minute, I'll come back with more description, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm back again. I raced down to the burning ship, and just as I walked up to the ship, climbed over the picket lines, I met a man coming out dazed. He couldn't find his way. I grabbed a hold of him, It's Philip Mangone. Philip Mangone, A-N-G-O-N-E, of New York. Philip Mangone, he's burned terribly in the hands, and he's burned terribly in the face, his eyebrows, and all his hair is burned off, but he's walking and talking plainly and distinctly, and he told me he jumped. He jumped with other passengers. Now, there's a Mr. Spey. It sounds like Spey. We're not sure of it. And he also got out, and we noticed the lines, the different lines, the airship.
So he's saying that he, you know, everyone's dead except for the guy that I just came across that's burned up. Now has
he's
no
all
hair.
Burned up. He looked horrible.
Unbelievable what fire can do to a man. No hair, I tell you.
Yes. Also funny, he said that he saw a bunch of people fainting, and I have a theory that people fainted way more back then than they do today.
Why?
Why don't people faint much anymore? But back then, that's all you saw in the movies.
And it's they hold the back of their hand to their forehead. And,
yeah.
And his...
That's why they're fanning themselves.
Why have we, as a society, though, really accentuated the, oh, the humanity, when it was pretty casual when he said it, when he was, you know, going over the initial explosion. Oh, the humanity, like it was just part of conversation.
Yeah, did he only say it once?
That was it. That was it. But we have...
It is so crazy.
We think it's like this pause of,
Well, Junior's entire case.
Do you believe
them
in miracles? And I mean, that was like such a catchphrase, oh, the humanity.
I know.
Did you know the...
catchphrase. Say
the last,
did he trademark it?
People weren't wearing shirts and stuff.
What year did the last survivor of the Hindenburg?
There had to have been a
didn't they just show him at the Mavericks game or something like that, or the Stars game?
I was a World War II guy.
Oh,
there had to have been a 5-year-old on there, right? Or was it an adults only, like a booze cruise?
It was a topless cruise, I think.
The last survivor, Werner Donner, died November 8, 2019.
Good to be with you.
Wow.
At the time of the disaster, Donner was 8. And vacationing with his family.
Wow.
How affluent.
That is right.
Hey, Werner.
Hello.
He recalled later that his mother threw him and his brother out of the ship and jumped after them. They survived, but his father and sister were killed. So do some jokes about that.
Well, funny thing. my dad was not that nice. So, he was back in the topless section at the time.
Pre-Hitler.
Yes, he was a Nazi.
That's right. He was a pre-Nazi.
A pre-Nazi.
All right, Craig. Would you like to apologize to the family of Herbert Morrison?
Yes, I apologize. Okay.
Thank you.
That's all we really wanted out of this.
What about the
should he have won a Katie?
Werner Donner.
I'd give it away.
In hindsight, perhaps, maybe a Lifetime Achievement Award, something like
that. There is something sketchy about a reporter who's covering what he knew was a seminal event right there, then and there, saying, I'm going to run inside now and hide. Yeah,
right.
I'll be back later.
Well, it was live to tape, so. I know,
Werner. You're very soon.
You know, not exactly live. He went back and threw it on Adobe Premiere and... tightened it up a little bit.